for coming late.
Showing up. The Harbuku Kosai. What an interesting two parashas. I wish we could split these up and go through Shemitah one week and go through the curse of them another week and go through Klolos and everything in another week. But the fact is, we just can't do it. It's come all together right here. So let's explain. Why do we have Shemitah? Why do we have such a concept of Shemitah, waiting 6 years, working for 6 years, and then the seventh year resting? So the Rambam in Mori Nevuchim quotes down that he said the opposite of how everybody usually quotes him. I've always seen him quoted as saying that you work for 6 years, so you need the field to rest, so we let it rest in the seventh year. But it's not really that way. You look at the Rambam doesn't really say it that way. He says the opposite, that you work because you rested in the seventh year, you'll be able to work the next six. Because normally you have to let your land lay fallow. That's a big word, but whatever. You have to let your land lay fallow for a couple years. Like, I don't know, like let it work a year, and then let it lay fallow for a year, work it a year, and whatever it is. That's the normal way of doing things. But if you let it rest for the year of Shemitah, the bracha, the Rambam says, is to work it for the next six. The question that everybody asks on the Rambam is that the Psukim say the opposite. The Psukim say the order of Sheish Shanim Tizra Karmecha, Tizra Sadecha, you should plant your field for 6 years, and then afterward, about Shana Shviz, then you'll be able to, then you have the year of Shemitah. So it seems to be that it's 6 years leading up to Shemitah, and that seems to be a connection to Shabbos, that you have 6 days of work, and what do you do on Shabbos? You rest from the days of work, right? And that seems to be what the Sefer HaChinuch says. The Sefer HaChinuch seems to say that the reason why is it's just like Shabbos, it's supposed to be some sort of a rest day after you worked for so hard all week long. It's supposed to be sort of a thing to get you to rest a little bit more. But it's still a little bit strange. The Sefer HaChinuch also says it's to improve our emunah. But I can give you another thing to improve your emunah. You know, like, if you have to let your land lay fallow, why not have it be like, 1 year, you know, 1 year you let this part of your land lay fallow. The next year you let this part of your land lay fallow. And every year you have to have a seventh of your land lay fallow. So by the end of 7 years, every part of your land at one point did rest. Why not do that? Wouldn't that help your agriculture and help your crops if you did such a thing? Why not do something like that? So,
right.
I guess that would be the easiest thing. And instead of making everybody rest all at once and have all the farmers have 1 year where they're just like, all right, what are we going to do now? You know? So it's just let them all do it at one point. Have it be where they all work every year. They just let part of their land not be worked every single year. I would assume that would be the easiest. It's not my question. It's a Pardes Yosef's question. But it's a very, very strange question.
How would that help
to make
land?
It easier. To make it easier. Well, you got to let it lay fallow. You got to let it be not planted. No, why does that help?
Yeah.
That's an agriculture thing. So I happen to be a farmer. So I can answer you that I have to put my hand out like that because that's the way farmers usually do, you know? But I would get like a whole thing. Yeah. So either way,
farmers feed.
Oh, yeah, either way, it could be suspenders. the new ones were suspenders. The reason why is because I learned this in the Museum of Science and Industry. If you go downstairs basement, if you go in the basement of the Museum of Science and Industry, they have these little machines. You get to play them. And you get to play these machines, and all of a sudden, there's these machines where they say, like, do you want to be a farmer for a day? So I saw that. I'm like, yeah, who doesn't? So I went ahead and I started pressing buttons and started doing everything. And they started showing me, like, okay, you can plant corn or wheat or barley or this. What do you want to plant? So I said, wheat, because I always like wheat. So I planted wheat. And they said, what do you want to do the second year? I said, plant wheat. I said, you have made a certain amount of money and gave me like a certain amount. You have made $300,000. He said, what do you want to do the third year? I said, plant wheat. So at the end of the year, I'm like, I'm thinking like millions, you know, like getting my hands all ready together. Like, I'm going to make millions off this. I'm going to be a millionaire. All of a sudden, like, says to me, you have lost $200,000.
Uh-huh.
Why? Because the wheat, if you plant it 3 years in a row, the ground isn't strong enough to be able to handle it. You need to let it rest a little bit. If you don't let it rest, it's just going to ruin everything. Because the land has to, if you keep planting and keep working the ground and you keep letting it go up and go up and go up, it's just not going to be good. The land does not go that way. It doesn't grow that way. It's the same thing with cats, by the way. The first litter of cats are always the strongest. The second litter are a little bit weird. The third litter, when they have kittens, the third litter of kittens are so messed up, you usually have to kill every single one. That's why the Israeli cats are so off. They're out of it. They're like, by the third litter of cats, they're just like bumping themselves into walls, you know? They're just like running around everywhere because it's terrible. Either way, but that's
the
idea.
The first ones.
What? Well, you find them once in a while.
It's crazy because I always said in Tel Aviv they have stronger cats than Yerushalayim.
Well, they also have third litters in Tel Aviv. Oh, the first litters go to Tel Aviv. The third litters stay in Yerushalayim. That makes sense. They probably take cars there. What litter are you? I'm first. All right, you can come in. You stay in the trunk. That's hilarious. All right, anyway, the Partizosis has a great reason, though. He quotes it down from the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Lamed Tesem Beis. He says, the reason why we keep Shemitah is to show us that it's his land, that he can do as he wants, and he can tell us when we have to keep Shemitah and when we don't keep Shemitah, and make everyone, you know, what it's basically doing, it's making everyone decide to realize that God is the one in charge. Now, check out Rashi. Let me borrow your Chumash for just a second. Rashi in the beginning of the parsha says Shabbos LaHashem in Pasuk Beis. Rashi says L'shem Hashem K'shem Shenamar B'Shabbos Bereishis. It's got to be done for the sake of God, like it says by Shabbos of Bereishis. You want to tell me where it says by Shabbos Bereishis that it was done L'shem Shemayim?
First Shabbos.
The first Shabbos. First Shabbos ever that it was done L'shem Shemayim.
That was. Sorry, when they.
No, first Shabbos ever. Other Marishon.
It's the seventh day
Adam,
of creation.
With God, on the seventh day of creation. Where does it say that they did it with L'shem Shemayim? What does it say anywhere? K'shem Shenamar, like it says, by Shabbos Bereishis. What does it say? A very, very strange line of Rashi.
It
says Rav Wolfson. Happens to be Rav Shaftar started getting into Rav Wolfson. That's a bad part about learning in the core at night. But Rav Wolfson is an unbelievable territory here. He says that the fact is, other Marishon, what was he doing all week? He wasn't even born yet. He was only born on Friday. You can't say that Shabbos is a rest, a day of rest after 6 days of working. You work for 6 days and all of a sudden you need a day of rest, and that's what Shabbos is. It can't be that way. Because other Rishon kept Shabbos. He didn't need to rest. So why did other Rishon keep Shabbos? Says Rav Wolfson, based on this Pardes Yosef, based on the Gemara and Sanhedrin, Lama Tassel of the Bays, L'Shem Hashem. For HaKadosh Baruch Hu. L'Shem Shemayim. It doesn't say it anywhere. It's an obvious thing if you think about it. It's only K'shem Shenamar. As it says, not that it's K'shem, not it's K'modech Siv. It's not as it's written in a Pasuk. K'shem Shenamar. It's like it's said by people. Why do we keep Shabbos Bereishis? Why did other nations have to keep Shabbos Bereishis? It's God told them to. It's a simple reason. There's no other reason. Everyone tries to give these soda sticker reasons within Shemitah and everything. You got to remember something. Shemitah is based on Shabbos. Shabbos, there's no reason that we can possibly understand. Sure, we can give little reasons like, oh, we wanted to rest or to make us get ourselves working for next week and everything. Other things and stuff like that. There are certain times when we have to have something like that where we have to work and stuff like that. But the fact is, the real reason behind Shabbos, the real reason why we have it is because God told us that we want to have it. And that's the shaki on the pasuk. It's a Shabbos LaHashem. It's a rest for God. It's because God told us to do it, and that's the only reason why we do it. It's a cute reason. Oh, oh wow! I can't believe. All right, wow. I might faint. All right, I'm nailless in Torah. We're gonna get into our nailless in Torah a little bit later. But you guys, Karmachalos Tizmor. It says Karmachalos Tizmor in this pasuk. Tizras Sadecha. That's
Shisha Tizmor. So it could have been.
Yeah, of course we can go into all those answers, but let's not go into that right now because we don't want to. God was right. Yeah, God was like, geez, to me, that was 6 million years. I'm really tired. Like, I'm going to have to take a little bit of rest now. All right, if you guys don't mind, just, you know, I'll be over there in the bed. Doesn't make any sense. All right, anyway, yeah, Tizras Adecha, Vashishanim Tizmor Karmecha. You should prune your vineyards. Tizmor, it's such a weird lashon. What's the lashon of Tizmor? So, the time of Hagen page, Reish Ayin Gimel, says that Zmiros, that we sing, are based on pruning. What do you do when you prune? What do you do when you prune?
Cut off the bad.
You cut off the bad parts of branches, and you let the other branches start growing better. And you cut off like little grapes and whatever it is to get the other grapes to grow better. And that's the point of pruning. So everybody, what's in Zmiros? Why do we sing? Why is Judaism so into singing? And why do we do it Friday night, and especially Hasidim? They're into it like crazy. And they get there, and they have just one after the other. They come up with these nigunim, and they even take Goyish songs and make it into Jewish songs, and make it into a Jewish sort of a thing. You just all you have to do is listen to Leif to or four. I just listened to it.
Oh my God.
Oh my, did anybody figure out what that first song is? What is it?
No, that's the second one.
The first song. You know what the one is? No, shut up. You know what it is? Nobody got it. The first one, the very beginning, Lake Tor 4.
I heard it before.
The very beginning is...
How's it go? Wait, don't tell me. How's it go?
I can't. You won't recognize it because he's doing it in a regular guitar without the heavy metal guitar. But it is Nirvana, Smells Like Teen Spirit.
I would have guessed that.
You would never guess. Oh, and all of a sudden, Kurt Cobain would be brought into a Jewish CD. You would never think that
Cobain behind it.
But we didn't bring that into Judaism. Like, you don't put that on a CD, like cocaine. Like, oh, it's not going to be put on a CD. Well, but of course, you have that right there. The point behind Zmiros is what it's supposed to be is pruning, getting rid. There's a kedusha to the song. There's a kedusha of a Jew when he sings a song. What it does is it gets rid of, it destroys anything that's around there. It keeps the kedusha and takes away any of the tumah that's anywhere around there. In other words, you have the kedusha. He knows I'm saying a revulsion. he's there. What are you doing? Alright, anyway, you know, the Zmiros are supposed to keep away all the shading from all around you, kick them out, and be able to surround you with a kedusha that surrounds you all around you so that nothing you do can let any tuma in. That's why, what do we start off our tefillah with? We want our tefillahs, we want our Shema and our Shemona Esrei to go straight up to Shemayim, right? What do we start off our davening with? Psukit Zemra. Why Psukit Zemra? What's Zmiros? What is a Zemra? Is a Zemra just Jewish songs? Because technically, Eddie Vedder is someone Jewish. Technically, Adam Sandler is Jewish. So should we listen to them? And that's Jewish music. Weird Al Yankovic. If you listen to Weird Al Yankovic, like, all of a sudden you hear some like great stuff. You hear like, you know, like what is that? Like, you hear.
Finally, someone understands.
If you listen to that, he said Jewish music, Matzah Yo, on your very own phone. You're putting on Matzah Yo during Sphira for people to call you.
You're
I'm sitting there and I'm just like, oh my gosh. Anyway, the point is it just like stom Jewish music? No. The Jewish music is supposed to be something that is a Zmiros, something that we call a Zemer. Tehillim is a Zmiros. Even though you're not singing it, Hallel are Zmiros. Even though you're not singing it, it's a Zemer. Why? Why? Because it was set up in a way that David HaMelech had the ability to be able to destroy things from it, to destroy the tumah that's all around you. We say Pesukim Zimra, we coat ourselves with this little a protection mode all around us. We're putting like this huge box in front of us. So whenever we daven, it surrounds the tefillah, and whenever the shadim try to get into it, or the mazikin or the mekatrigim, when they try to go into these things, they can't get there because the Pesukim Zimra surrounds it. That's why we do Pesukim Zimra before davening. And we end off davening with Tachnun, Ashrei, Velatzion, and Aleinu, and the Yom. Surround it with Tehillim all around. So that we make sure that that Shemona Esrei is covered with something so that we know that there's nothing there, you know, nothing's going to be able to get to it. That's the point behind Zmiros. And what does that have to do with Shemitah? It's a hard, hard board, and I'm not going to get into it, but the basic idea is that Shabbos, that's why Shabbos, the Zmiros are so darn important. They're supposed to be a protection for everything you do all week long. Shabbos is a day of rest. Shemitah is that year of rest. It's supposed to be a protection for everything you did for the rest of the years. And that's why we sing so much on Shabbos, and that's why Zmiros are so important. That's why people go crazy. Rav Shach, whether this mice is true or not, but it's said over by enough Gedolim that we can say it. Rav Shach says that one of the reasons why his son didn't go off the derech, but did not remain as firm as he was, is because he never sang Zmiros on Shabbos. Said he never sang Zmiros on Shabbos. His son, they asked him what happened to his son. It's a famous thing that many, many Rosh Yeshivas have said. She said, why didn't he become a Rosh Yeshiva? Because
dirt.
Of that. Not dirt. She said, why didn't he? And you just, you, and you're not, it's not, it's unexpected.
Our Rosh Yeshiva.
I have to slap you. Get over here.
Turn the tape off.
The damage has been done.
That is that. But there is something to it. All right. Evan Maskus, at the very end of the parsha, such a crazy pasuk at the very end of the parsha, at the very end of Parsha Zahar.
Watch.
Evan Maskus, what does it say? Lo sasu lecham elilim, don't make for yourselves any gods. With pasul matzeva lo sakim lecham, don't set up any molten idols. The Evan Maskus lo sitnu ba'artzachem, and a stone floor you can't make in your lands. Lishtachlos led to bow down to a kenei Hashem elokeichem. This is the reason why in this floor right here, when you say tachnun in the yeshiva and skoki, you cannot bend your head straight down for tachnun. You have to turn your head to the side a little bit.
Really?
Because by Evan Maskus, when you have a stone floor and it's not carpeted or anything like that, or when it's wooden, you turn your head a little bit, right, and once you go like that to the side. There are people that argue because they say this is not stone really, or maybe this
marble.
Is this could be from like 1922, but I don't know. It's like, either way,
marble?
But the reason why is because when you go straight down on top of a stone, that is something that you cannot put inside. That's what the people in Avodah Zarah, the Ovdei Avodah Zarah, used to put inside their places, and people used to bow down on top of it. What's the reason why they used to do this? So the Panach Raz and the Chizkiyahu and the Hadassah Kane and Bo Stay, the reason why is because they used to put pictures in the floor. And on those pictures, if they when they lowered their eyes and they put themselves down and stared at those pictures in the floor while they were trying to concentrate, I guess they were losing the brain inside their head, they started imagining things. And when they imagined these things, if they stared at it for long enough, they started imagining things and they were able to do tremendous amounts of tuma with it. I don't know how exactly it works, but they were able to do kishuf by staring at these floors and doing things like that.
You know those picture books you look in an hour of?
You can find something inside there. Yeah. It's basically what they were doing. And that's supposed to be the thing, and that's the reason why we don't do it, because it's supposed to be that sort of thing. The problem is, there's a diik. Lo sitnu ba'ar tzachem. You don't put it inside your land. What was the Beis HaMikdash floor like?
Stone
floor, my friend. You can't put it inside your land. They make a diik, but you could put it inside the Beis HaMikdash. How can you put it in the Beis HaMikdash? It's much better. You would think that would be the most usher place to put it. The most usher place would be the place where you give it over to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why in the world would you be that way? Why would you do this?
Because no one's going to stand in the Beis HaMikdash and go like this to the floor. It's like finding the.
You would stare at it. There's nothing else to do. You're waiting for the Kohen Gadol and Yom Kippur. What are you doing? During Chazaras HaShatz. What are you doing? You're staring at the floor. What else are you doing? Was staring at your neighbor, talking to him?
Yeah, yes.
Yes, of course. You know, but it's a little strange. What else would you do? What? And you all bow down to it, exactly. And they do bow down on top of the stone floors. This is a way of avodah zarah, and the pasuk answers it. Why do we allow it in the Beis HaMikdash? So the Chassam Sofer says such a poshut reason. He says the reason why is because you have to do it this way. Because what did they do when it came to the Korban Pesach or Korbanos and stuff like that? They shechted the animals. The blood flew all over the place, right? Let's say the floors were not made of stone. What would you make the floor out of? Let's say you would make it out of dirt, right? You made it out of dirt.
And
then the blood would be straight down. It would make it all muddy and everything. That would be disgusting. Nobody would want to stand there. Let's say you made it out of wood. All the blood and all the water that you need to clean off with this stuff would rot. It would all rot the floors and everything. They didn't have carpeting. I don't even know if they had such a concept of carpeting. I guess they could have put skins all over the floor, but you put blood on top of carpeting. That carpeting is not going to look so good after a couple days, you know?
Stinks.
It's going to be an absolutely disgusting carpeting. People are going to walk inside, they're just going to be like, oh man. Like putting your feet inside it, like stepping in squishy carpeting that's like all bloody and everything.
That would
be disgusting. Rather, what they did was they behechruch, they didn't have a choice. They needed stone floors. So the only place that they mounted it was Bedavka in the Beis HaMikdash. They had to matter it out of necessity, says the Chassam Sofer, in order for them to be able to do anything. But it's something that has to do with the Avodah Zarah. You're right. But we have to rely on the fact that it's a Makom Kadosh and people wouldn't do it. Normally, we never rely on such a thing. Normally, we would never do such a thing.
Same thing
but in
here.
This situation where there's nothing else for us to do, then you have to do it.
We're not going to look at the
Avodah Zarah. For sure. And you would think the exact same thing. Why not in a show? Why would you have the exact same thing? 100% true. Normally, we don't trust a person enough. Even in the Beis HaMikdash itself, by the Simchas Beis Shoeva, they had to put up little things for the woman to stand on top because they didn't trust the fact. Even though they're in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, it was men and women together, they wanted to keep the woman out, so they put up an Ezra's Nashim on top. They had to do that because they were afraid, even though it's a Makom Kadosh, you still had to be afraid that maybe something was going to happen. The only time, by the way, that they ever mounted this sort of a thing was by a woman of a... It's a big thing by Sota,
right,
that you're allowed to look at the Sota woman through a mirror. You're allowed to look through the Kior. The whole purpose of the Kior was to be able to look through the mirror to be able to see the woman. The only reason why that was matered was because you can't look at an Erva. But the fact is you have to see the woman when you're sacrificing a Korban because you have to look at the person that you're sacrificing for to make sure that he's paying attention while you're sacrificing. So you have to know that the person is there and looking at it. But you can't look at the woman directly because of the Erva. So instead they would look through the mirror. So everybody asks, what, it's mutter to look at a woman through a mirror? What, I could go on a bus and just stare through the window at every woman on the bus? I would be able to look in my rear view mirror and I'd be able to look at a woman? How is that possible? Chas v'shalom to say such a thing. So they answered, no. In the Beis HaMikdash, when the Kohen Gadol, when the Kohen is sacrificing and he has Zrizus, Kohanim and Zrizenhain, when they're doing this, then we'll say there's no Hirhurin. Then there won't be any bad thoughts. But by a regular person or any other time when he's not doing the Avodah, then we have to be afraid and you can never ever. We can't allow you to regularly look inside a, what's it called, to be able to look on the other side.
In a show, if there's a mirror, it's okay.
In a show, if there's a mirror, they actually go really against it. You know, right like that. Having a window in which you can see yourself through that window is also a bit of a problem inside a show. Because why? The main problem is standing in front of it. You can't have it in front of it. Yeah, so you can't have it in front of you.
But every once in a while, I can look over myself and smile.
I would. I wouldn't put the money on it. funny. But has anybody ever seen those things opened? Those shades?
Yes.
They have been opened?
Yes.
During davening?
No.
Yes.
No, they usually close when
they're it's not sunny?
No.
Yes.
Doesn't matter. You can't see reflection.
You have to check it out. You should be talking, buddy.
Tomorrow, Moshi's going to open them all. It could be the reason why they don't do it because...
They go that way. Can't see reflection.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe you can't see reflection because it's...
Diagonal?
The weirdest shape.
First of all, I don't think it was that tall.
This is the Pentagon.
Except the octagon.
This is a stop sign.
It's an octagon.
It's an octagon, right?
Oh, stop sign.
Yeah, it's a
stop sign. What's the Pentagon?
Very weird. We're in the octagon,
nothing to do with anything. I'm sorry to bring this up, but does anybody have a dollar on them?
Yeah.
A dollar on them. Has anybody ever seen this before?
Triangle?
A Jewish star?
Yeah.
That's a Jewish star. These stars over here, they're all five-pronged stars, the regular stars. Look at what shape all the stars are in. All the stars. Put all the stars together. It's a Jewish star. It's a Jewish star. It's six. There's six corners.
Can't see.
Somebody just pointed that out to me. I was shocked.
There's a lot more. There's a lot more things because the person who made this had was breakfast with. I forgot to remember his name.
With the Jew?
Oh yeah, breakfast. And the Jew helped design it.
So ridiculous.
Who very, very funny.
Okay, wait a second. So let's go to Amelis Bator. Since we have a Hukosai, that was time. Oh, okay, so let's go to Amelis Bator because we only have like 10 minutes left. Amelis Bator. Bechukosai is in Bechukosai Teilechu. If you go in my ways, that's Mitzvah Tishmoro, and you keep my mitzvahs, Basizmo is something you do then. Says Rashi, the very end of the Rashi, it says, Homani Mekayim in Bechukosai Teilechu. What is in Bechukosai Teilechu? Tell me. You should do Amelim Betorah. You should be Amel Betorah. You should work in the Torah. So I never look at the Sefer, but Alinu L'Shabeach from Yitzhak Silberstein, he's the son-in-law of Rebbe Yashin, he says down such a crazy mice. He explains the pshat behind Amelus B'Torah is for your brain and your thoughts to be so into sugyas in the Gemara, into different sugyas, that when wherever you are, whatever you're doing, you're somehow able to fit it into the sugya that you're learning. You're somehow able to fit it into some board that you just heard. That everything you do, you're walking on the street, you hear something on the radio, you do this, you hear that, you somehow fit it in no matter what you do. That was the Milah of David HaMelech, by the way. That David HaMelech and the kings were supposed to have a Sefer Torah on their arms so that they can look in the Torah whenever they wanted to. The pshat was not that they had time to learn the Torah, they had tons of stuff to do, but to find the Torah in everything that they did. That was supposed to be the point, to find the Torah everywhere they went. I mean, that's what Amelus and Torah really is. So he gave such a crazy story. It's happened in Slobodka. In Slobodka, in old Slobodka, not the yeshiva in Yerushalayim, but in Slobodka in Europe, there was a bacher that learned crazy hard. He was learning all day and all night, 20 hours a day, only slept 4 hours a night, and ended up going a little crazy. He just lost it a little bit. He lost a little part of his brain. He lost it. And everybody said, okay, he's got to get to a doctor. So they called over some guy, and they told this bacher, okay, you go and take him and bring him to, what's it called? Bring him to the doctor. So he went, he had to go out of town, whatever it was. He brought him in. So the guy was walked inside the doctor's office and immediately said, hi, I'm here to take my friend here to the doctor because he's gone a little bit crazy. The guy's like, what are you talking about? I took you because you're crazy. You're the one that's crazy. He said, look, he's even denying it. He's so crazy, he's even denying it himself. He's like, what do you mean I'm denying it? I'm the one that's taking you. I'm the one that came to take you. I don't know what you're talking about. And the guy's like, I feel so bad for him. He's going a little bit nuts. They're sitting there and they're arguing with one another who's nuts. The psychologist is sitting there, the guy who's there, the doctor is sitting there. He's looking at them and he's like, what in the world am I supposed to do? So, I told this over to somebody earlier. He's like, why didn't he call him? I'm like, genius. Phone call. He's like 1920. He's like, hi, can I speak? You're not going to talk to anybody on the phone. There's no phones.
No.
So what would you do if you were this guy? How would you figure it out? This is a genius move. What would you do if you want to figure out
names.
Which one?
You know which one is their patient by name?
No, he doesn't know yet. They just came to him.
Wait, we'll say it again. Say it again, though.
It came to him. Both guys are saying they're crazy. You have to treat one of them. What would you do? How do you know which one is the crazy one? Listen to what this doctor did. He said, which one of you has the money for the appointment? The person who has the money cannot be the crazy one. Because you wouldn't give the money over to a crazy person. You would give them, the crazy person would get rid of the money. So it must be the person who has the money is the same one. I don't know if he was right or not. Regardless, they asked later on, by the way, he said Rabbi Yitzchak Silverstein asked Rabbi Eliashiv if that would work, if you can do that in such a situation, and would that work? Halacha l'maisa, can that work? And Rabbi Eliashiv said, no. He said, it's too much of a topic, you wouldn't be able to do that. It's like, crazy, it's whatever, so that's what he did. He ended up doing that, and he ended up figuring out which one it was. So they asked the Rosh Hashiva later, why in the world did the kid do this? Like, we know he's crazy, but like, why in the world did he think that he was on that side? So the Rosh Hashiva said this. He said, we were learning Kiddushin this month. There's a Gemara in Kiddushin. I think it's on Daf Samachay. Let me just make sure. Kiddushin Samachay and Beis. The Maisa goes, and he was learning this Daf, where you have two men, a woman, and a package. One man claims, this guy's my Eved, she's my wife, and this is my package. The other guy claims, this guy's my Eved, this is my wife, and this is my package. The woman claims, these are my two Avadim, and it's my package. What do you do? That's the Gemara in Kiddushin. What do you do? The kid was so into the Sugya and into his learning, once somebody claimed something, he immediately had to counter it with a claim saying, no, that's me, I'm the guy. And he countered it knowing this Gemara within the Gemara, going into the whole Gemara. He was so into his learning. So obviously, that's not a great example because you don't want to emulate that guy, exactly. You don't want to go crazy. But the Amelus Betorah is the sign that he was trying to get out of it. That's the Amelus. To totally bring yourself into the Sugya. He gave another Maisa with the Grizz. This is an awesome Maisa. The Grizz is sitting there on Motzei Shabbos. He's about to dive a Marv, and he had a minion in his house. He was getting a minion together with people at his house. The Grizz. The
Briscoe.
Yeah, the Briscoe Rub. He says Zed Salavation. He lived in Yerushalayim around the 40s and 50s. So the Briscoe Rub sat there, and he was sitting around about to start Marv, and a guy came in. You know, the hush of guys, you know, to be able to get in there. And the guy asked him a Shaila, can I ask you a question on Reb Chaim? Reb Chaim, his father. So he said, yeah, 100% ask me the Shaila. So he asked him the Kasha. And the Grizz said, oh, that's a very good Kasha. And he goes over to the window and starts thinking, starts stroking his beard and starts thinking. Meanwhile, the other guys that were there for the minion, they start talking about the whole Shiloh. They start going on, and this guy talks this way, this guy talks that way. One guy gives one answer, another guy knocks that out, another guy asks a question on that. They start arguing with each other and start getting one after the other, whatever, and start going one against the other. All of a sudden, like, guys come in, they hear from the outside, they hear like this huge fight going on in the Briscoe Rub's house, you know? Like people like arguing in Torah. So like people start piling in, like 20, 30 people until finally there's 50 people. Briscoe Rub didn't live in a big house, you know? He had like 50 people piled in inside the house. They're arguing, screaming at each other. They had like, everybody had like 50 different terrors, and everybody's knocking out the other guy's terrors. And finally they come down, and they finally like, they calmed down, and everybody turned around and said like, no, so what does the Briscoe Rub have to say? An hour. It took an hour for all this to happen. They turn to the Briscoe Rub. The Briscoe Rub turns around slowly. He's thinking, and he says, I don't know what my father would do with such a Shiloh. He looks around and he says, Makarapo. Didn't even notice the 50 people were inside the room. Shocked the 50 people were inside there. It's like, what's with all the noise and everything? Whoa. He didn't hear anything. He heard nobody come in. He heard no discussions. He was so absorbed in the Shiloh, staring at the window. He had absolutely no idea what was going on behind him. When he turned around, he said, oh my gosh, what in the world is going on here? You're right. It seems like a space opera. You can say it about anybody but the Briscoe Rub. You'd be like,
space opera for an hour?
Wow.
Like, it's space opera. Like, it's unbelievable. Wow, you are such a good weave.
That is the shot that made with the Torah. To be able to be so involved in a Shiloh, not have any clue where you're
going. The nace of this story was
the nace.
Enough.
The nace. There's already a nace
to go around to all 50 of them.
Be like, that's some serious weed.
Okay, we're not going to go into Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva is a tremendous thing over here.
And
I think the only person that was there last year when I said it was Sammy. Yeah, I'll give you out from the end of Parshas Bichukosa. I'll give you the Rashi Devarim. This happens to be one of the best works in the world. The very, very end of the Bichukosai, it says, Bechol Meiser Bakar Vetzon.
Oh, where am I?
Yeah. Bechol Meiser Bakar Vetzon, Kosher Yavartach Zashavet, Asiri Yakodesh Lashem. We're talking about Meiser of your cattle. Any tithe that you give of your cattle and your sheep, anything that has to be passed under, everything is passed under a rod. The guy holds out a rod like this. The sheep and the cows go under it. And the Asiri, the tenth one that goes under, you paint it with a red thing. Yeah, Kodesh Lashem, it's Kodesh Barakodesh Baruch Hu. So then the Jitzei Shimshon asks tons of kashas on this pasuk. First of all, the whole thing is a little bit off. Kol Asher Yavartach Zashavet, it should be Tavor Oto Tachas Hashavet. That's number one. Number two, Shavet is a weird word to say. Why bring it under a rod? And number three, Syria, Kodesh Lashem, just say that Syria, you paint it with the red mark or whatever it is. There's just a lot of weird things going on in this pasuk. You don't really get anything out of the pasuk itself. What's going on in this pasuk? So Netzitz Hashem Shem says an awesome word. He says, we know that the Asar Rugi Malchus, the 10 people were killed by the Romans, obviously not at the same time, but there were the Asar Rugi Malchus. They were killed based on the sale of Yosef, on the Mechiras Yosef, right? There were 10 Shvatim involved in the sale, and Yosef was sold, and those 10 Asar Shvatim took the place. They took their place within the Asar Rugi Malchus. That was the Gzar Din that was sent about. Now the problem was that there weren't 10. There were only 9, because Reuven wasn't there. He was either doing tshuva or he was with his father. Binyamin wasn't there, he was too young, and Yosef was in the pit. So there were only 9 people involved. So where is the 10th? So the 10th person, we know from the Gemara, the Gemara says HaKadosh Baruch Hu was the 10th one. HaKadosh Baruch Hu joined himself within the minion to show you that they were still doing something Hashem Shemayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu joined himself in and everything. Now, if you say, why 12 altogether, minus Binyamin, minus Yosef, minus Reuven, I was altogether 9. 12 Shvatim altogether? Oh my gosh. Levi.
Oh, yeah, Levi.
Okay, we're going to go over that later. Either way.
Anyway, so I had a good shadow in my head.
It was there. It was right there. So they all asked, who's going to take the place of a Kadosh Baruch Hu? Like, you can understand somebody who's going to take the place of everybody else, but who's going to take the place of a Kadosh Baruch Hu as being the person who's going to die for a Kadosh Baruch Hu's so quote unquote sin that he had over here with the what's called the Aseres HaShvatim? So the answer is such an unbelievable answer. They say Rabbi Akiva Gemara Bava Kama Mem Aleph Amud Aleph says that Rabbi Shimon Amsuni and Nechamya Amsuni started darshaning out, or Nechamya Amsuni, it depends who it was. He started darshaning out all the Essen in the Torah, every S in the Torah, until he came. He started darshaning out one S to the other, and finally came to the S of Es Hashem Elokecha Tira. You have to fear God, and he said, can't be. There's no way you could fear anybody but God. And he decided to forget it. He threw everything out. He said, forget about everything. So his Talmidim said to him, Rebbe, what are you going to do with all the essence that you darshan before? He said, Shame, Kibalti Schar La Drisha, Kachibalti Schar La Prisha. Right, I get schar for darshaning them, I get schar for going away from them. That's what he said, right? So Rebbe Akiva comes along and says, Es La Rabos Talmidim Chachamim. Rebbe Akiva comes along and says, no, you can include Talmidim Chachamim in your fear for Shemayim. Says the Kadosh Baruch Hu to Rebbe Akiva, what, you're going to equate yourself to me? You think you're just as great as me when it comes to these things? How could you say such a thing? Because of that, Rabbi Akiva, you're going to take my place in the Asar Rugi Malchus. You're going to be the person who takes my place. You think you're equal to me? Fine, you're going to take my place. You're going to be the 10th one. And it's going to be the worst, because the Kadosh Baruch Hu is obviously the greatest. He's going to have the worst punishment of the combing of the flesh and everything. He says, that whole Maisa is Meramis to in this pasuk. Check this out. The whole Maiser is an Otrika. That means an abbreviation. The Yadu Kulam. They all know. Lama Mes Akiva. Why did Akiva die? Shahaya Roe, who was a shepherd of Bakar Vatzon, of cattle and sheep. Why did Akiva die? Because Kol Asher Yavor, any one of the Shvatim that died was Tachas HaShevet. That was for one of the Shvatim. One of the Asur Gemachos, when they died, it was for a Shevet. But Ha'asiri, Rabbi Akiva, the 10th one, yeah, Kodesh LaHashem. He's Kodesh for a Kodesh Baruch Hu. He takes the place of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. He's the one that's up there.
Was he wrong to say what he said?
What?
Was he wrong to say what
he said? No. He's 100% right in what he said. Rabbi Akiva, because of that, Moshe Rabbeinu, you have to understand so many things. That's why it keeps going on. Moshe Rabbeinu came along after he saw this in Menachos, Daf Chav Tes, and asked, Zu Torah v'zu Schara. What, this is Torah. This is a Schar that you get for learning Torah. Look at Rabbi Akiva. His flesh was combed off for learning Torah, for being higher than me. He was 18 miles above Moshe Rabbeinu. And this is what he gets for a terrible, terrible death. Says Kadosh Baruch Hu, stoke, kachal b'machshava. Shut up. That's what I'm thinking. That's a weird line from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. What does he want with that? So the Shem Shem explains that also in a different place. He says stoke, kachal b'machshava means Rabbi Akiva, in order to get that high in Torah, you have to have yichus. You have to have schus avos. Rabbi Akiva didn't have that. He was Ben Gerim. Came from Sisera originally. It was a tremendous thing. But Rabbi Akiva was a Ben Gerim. He didn't have the schus avos to be able to get that high in his Torah learning. So in order to get that high, the only thing he could do was for him to accept upon himself tremendous yisurin, tremendous pain, tremendously bad things, for him to have his flesh combed off at the end of his life. So what he was saying is, Zu Torah v'zu Schara, said Rabbi Akiva, said Moshe Rabbeinu, how is it possible this guy, how can you give him such a bad punishment? Said HaKadosh Baruch Hu, stoke. quiet. That's what he wants. That's what's in Rabbi Akiva's head. Rabbi Akiva knew the consequences. He knew the only way for him to get this high was for him to have a terrible death, for him to have tremendous yisurin. He chose to do this. That's what he wants to do. So you can't argue on such a thing. Why didn't Moshe Rabbeinu get that? You have to go on and on, because the whole my love Rabbi Akiva over Moshe Rabbeinu is that Moshe Rabbeinu never understood one thing his entire life. Tzadik Viralo. He never understood why bad things happen to good people. Could never understand it. Throughout the Midrashim, he always asks, why did this thing happen? Why did that thing happen? Always. Tzadik Viralo. Kadosh Baruch Hu, why did he do this to the Jews? Why did he do that, etc.? Always didn't understand Tzadik Viralo. Tzadik Viralo is the shame of Tzur. The shame of Tzur of Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's the shame that HaKadosh Baruch Hu uses when he wants to refer to something like that. Rabbi Akiva got to that level. That's why. How did he get it? Because Akiva comes from the shame of Yaakov. Yaakov and Akiva are extremely similar. It's only off by one letter.
One letter, right?
Because from Yaakov. Yaakov Avinu did this. He was able to figure out everything when it came to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and figure out Tzur and Tzadik Viralo and everything that bad that happens to good people by taking the rock off the Be'er, off the well, and throwing it off when he saw Rachel. Took the Tzur off the Be'er of the Torah. That's the Tzur, the Tzadik Viralo, and realized why bad things happen, and thus he could live a life with sorrows throughout and still be able to say, yeah, I know, everything's good. When Dina got raped, what did he do? What did he, did he scream? Did he yell? It's quiet. The Shvatim yelled, what's wrong with you? How could, they started screaming at Shechem and Hamor, started going crazy. But Yaakov, you know, it's quiet. He understands. He knows it had to happen that way. Rabbi Akiva came along with all that. Rabbi Akiva came along all after that, being the person that Yaakov Avinu is part of, or part of Yaakov Avinu, or a nitzitz from Yaakov Avinu. He comes along. What's the reason why he starts to learn Torah? What got him to learn Torah over anything else? He sees the water making a hole in the rock, in the tzur. He saw the mayim in the tzur. The same exact thing. Very, very similar to what happened with Yaakov Avinu. He sees the tzur. That tzadik viralo was something that he understood. He understood what bad things had to happen, why he had to get the yisurin in order to get to the level that he got to. Moshe Rabbeinu never understood it. So Moshe Rabbeinu had to ask, Zu Torah Vizu Zchara? How could this bad thing happen to such a great person? To that he says, Shto Kakalama Shava, this is the way Rabbi Akiva is. The reason why is because he's on that level. You're not on that level. Why wasn't Moshe Rabbeinu allowed to be on that level? That's another story altogether. That's another thing altogether. But Rabbi Akiva was allowed to be on that level. He got the yisurin, he was there. There's still missing a couple parts of this. There's another four or five parts to this whole thing of Rabbi Akiva. But that's the Rashi Devarim that'll start all this, and we'll end with that for now. Have a good Shabbos, guys.